saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
I haven't seen the sunlight in 3 long years. Staring out into the ash-ridden sky with blackened concrete buildings sticking out with smoke rising from different windows. Light had become rare as electricity was restricted to generators only used for special occasions until the fear of losing the fuel was too great. Knowing things were different, better, before the world changed. I don't want to go outside. A heavy black powder clung to the windscreen of an abandoned car on an empty suburban street, void of people. It was empty, although I doubted it would be for long. After a grumble from the sky, closing the blinds and preparing for another long night, making my rounds to the house, checking the window to ensure there were no leaks. In the top bedroom, a pool of black sizzling rain had leaked in through the painted windowpane. A low sizzle while the rain ate through the wood, leaving paint chips and a small empty space leading to the outside. Spraying it with resentments, and already the fumes burnt at my eyes and nostrils. Leaving the room, I closed the door for the final time and lifted one of the planks of wood in the hallway. Pre-prepared for this purpose, one was nailed horizontally while another was placed diagonally before any of the gaps were filled with putty to stop the fumes. The room was now closed. Taking a can of red spray paint and marking it with a cross. With my hand on the door, I coughed deeply and hoped it sealed up in time. Checking the photos on the wall to see Toby, my pet cat, Ginger, and a menace to society, and remembered her passing at the 2-year mark, 12th of February, 2026, the anniversary of the acid rainstorms. The last of the birds fell from the sky, dead, and parts of their bodies rotting while they had been living. All pets found a way to escape their homes. I hadn't seen any wildlife since then. No corpses or signs of death, just one day, they were gone. Behind me, I heard the rushed footsteps going down to the basement. The place that could be our last refuge when everything collapsed down on us. Wiping my saliva with the back of my hand, the sirens blared outside. Closing my fatigued eyes and rested my forehead on the doorbeam. We'd been stuck underneath for a day at least, but I hoped several upcoming days were normal. The house was quiet, with the last of the residents now huddled in the basement, while I leaned on the door, taking a moment to enjoy a moment of peace, and after a long exhale, I stepped inside and closed the bathroom door and walked down the creaky stairs. 12 people sat huddled in the left-hand side with sleeping bags and blankets used for beds. In the far right-hand side was the toilet. A pungent odor remained with a faded curtain to give the semblance of privacy. A pot of lukewarm stew on a portable stove brewed, with canned food lining metal shelves. A desk with an old radio sat, waiting for the latest reports. Large barrels of drinking water lingered in the corner with 3 sad light bulbs dangling from the sky, powered by a generator. I nodded to Jimbo, who had been our Uber Eats driver and had been with us since the day of reckoning, stranded and unable to get home to his folks. There had been one call before the lines went dead. They were alive, and who knew if they still were. His black hoodie hung limp around his body. Dark eyes stared out at me from beneath the hood when a bored nod of greeting was given, with a crowbar resting across his lap. Charlie, our next-door neighbor over with my family, had joined us and brought their canned goods when his house became contaminated. My wife, Eliza, and my 2 sons, Neil and Steve. As for the others, a knock on the door and a demanding letter from the government forcing me to take 6 refugees into my home. They came from around the California area and were all deeply apologetic about the situation. We asked what things were like over there. Wildfires plagued them. And worst of all, they told us of shadow figures lurking inside the mist, and how the acid rain brought the dead back to life. I didn't know whether to believe it. The fumes from the rain could cause hallucinations, headaches, and death, while direct contact was far more grim.
Good evening, dear listeners. Be warned that an acid storm is coming down hard.
The voice rang out, creepily reminding me of an old recording from the 1950s. All the other radio stations had gone dead. The broadcast began randomly one night and continued ever since. Each of us tensed, expecting bad news strumming out from the speakers.
Remember, stay hidden during the night and do not, under any circumstances, go outside. The mist and rain are toxic, and fatalities have been reported.
We knew this, having memorized it from hearing it every damn fucking night.
Remain armed, just in case. And as a reminder, no guns. Firearms cause the mist to become flammable, and let's just say, more than one house down in Texas has been lost this way.
A hint of sadistic amusement edged to his tone, far too jovial for such a perilous time. Each of us had a weapon. A baseball bat, a knife, nails pressed into iron boards and onto police shields. Otherwise, we were sitting ducks. Back when the acid rain started, the police took our firearms and other weapons. There had nearly been an uprising. The result was the same. Our arsenal of weaponry had been reduced. Perhaps I should have set traps inside the house. The last time, one of the refugees' children got hurt during the frantic retreat from the basement when the storm eased. I walked up the stairs, turned the doorknob, and found it locked. Putting down the bar, a slow chorus of static rained out, and the lights above us flickered three times before they went out. The matches now struck, giving us base amounts of light, and any candle lit during the change would never light. They'd be useless. Only when they were melted down and reset, they would work again.
It's a bit windy tonight.
The arrogant bastard mocked us while the storm raged on.
I imagine I don't need to warn you about staying out of the rain.
No fucking shit, asshole. I spat bitterly.
If you've been living under a rock for the past 3 years, well, on the 20th of January 2026, there was a change of climate worldwide. Speculation as to the source is a mystery. The clouds threatened to block out the sun permanently. Oh, alas, listeners, Armageddon had arrived.
I wanted to turn the idiot off, but he was the only connection to the outside world.
There have been reports of riots in San Francisco, tornadoes ripping through the Midwest, so if you have family there, well, they're with God. Or perhaps the man downstairs. And?
The wind shook the house above my intensity. I wondered whether it would be standing in the morning, and the thunder cracked loudly.
Well, listeners, I hope you survive the night.
The words a cold growl before the line went dead, followed by a lighthearted jingle of a happy song that was abruptly cut. No one wanted to talk anymore. The first year we would chat and talk about pop culture or what we'd do when the rain stopped. It was lighthearted. The conversation dwindled down. Those who were armed sat closest to the door, ready to deal.
At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $24.99 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.
With whatever tried to enter. Traces of dust puffed down from the ceiling above and a slow creaking sound of footsteps walking above. And a chill went down my spine. No one ever saw who came with the storm. They would disappear. A loud crack of lightning burst nearby, causing us to jump. And once cleared, we tried to hear any further sounds. Someone was turning the doorknob, gradually becoming more intense, and a long, loud knocking could be heard. Some covered their ears. I tightened my grip on the hilt of my knife and glared up at the door, almost daring them to break inside. They never did. An occasional knock and scratching while the storm raged on. Finally, it faded, and with a burst of static, that grating voice.
Hello, listeners. I hope you all survive the night. And time to go above. Inspect the damage and carry on. Oh, and don't accept any government assistance. You're on your own.
We already knew this. There was a silence, and I walked up the stairs and stood at the door, putting my ear to it in the hope of overhearing anything lurking inside the house still. Yet there was nothing. I looked back, and each of them avoided my gaze. Each day, it was my task to inspect the house to declare it safe. Unlocking and opening the door, staring out into the hallway, the aroma of the night air strong, and slowly walked out to see the front door open. I know it was closed. I closed and locked it myself. A pool of acid rain rested outside on the lawn, having already eaten through a patch of the concrete, and I closed the front door, locking it. Any valuables, a smartphone, television, and expensive appliances I once had were now under a layer of dust, prizes of a bygone age. Food, water, medical supplies, those were what mattered. Walking into the kitchen, the barrel of water was still full, and a cupboard had been opened. The tin cans were mixed up, in different order. It could have been someone from the house who did it. I fixed them, listing them in alphabetical order, and then by food type. Beans, desserts, pasta. Checking around the windows, no sign of the acid rain entering. The buckets of human waste were thrown out into the backyard. Next was the lounge room. There were books and blankets, each person getting a piece of space in what had once been my organized home. Nothing looked out of the ordinary. About to leave, I saw someone lying on the couch, curled up in blankets, and froze. Each pace at a drawl, gently placing my foot down and avoiding the creaking part of the floor. The figure wasn't large, the size of a child, and I hoped it wasn't one of those beings. It was probably a child that managed to find their way inside. My hand trembled, grabbing the blanket and ripping it back with my knife upright, ready to strike. Only to see it had been two large teddy bears. No doubt a child wrapped them up. And with a relieved laugh, I patted the teddy's head and walked to the basement door, tapping it with the back of my hand, and opened it. Already, people were waiting in the stairs for the signal that it was time to get out.
"Come on up. It's safe," I said.
And soon they walked up, spreading to their designated areas they had made their own. The rooms became more cramped from the additional space, and more rooms being closed off. It was selfish of me, but I loathed having people inside my home. Staring out the window, the visibility was finally easing up, enough for me to go to the depot to get more food supplies. I doubted I'd receive any, but food and water disappeared faster than people think. Wrapping a thick gray scarf around my face, using goggles to keep the ash away from my eyes, and a jacket lined with plastic over my head to keep the ash and rain at bay. Stopping to do the same to my boots. The plastic would need to be discarded after every use, but it usually lasted long enough. Finally, I was ready. I couldn't risk even a drop of the rain touching my skin. Other people had the same idea. Lines of people covered up left their homes and immediately headed under the shelters made to protect people while they walked to the shopping mall. They were open on both sides, but some was better than nothing. All of the smaller businesses had shut or been seized. They stood empty. I avoided looking too long. I'd hear voices or see shadows peeking at me through the shutters. The old shopping center now had one purpose. The old sign had half melted, the names and logos of stores now gone. Whatever goods that were worthwhile, the government had seized 6 months in and would resupply us. A majority of the building to house people or act as a drop-off point. In front of me, two people were pushing to get food. No more grocery stores remained. In the parking lot, tables with supplies were set up and armed National Guard patrolled around us. Their uniforms had seen better days. No one drove anymore. Engines wouldn't start, even in ones that otherwise would work, especially not in my area. Despite it being early in the morning, there was a long line of people waiting for their chance at getting supplies. I stood in line with my back facing my direction. The line moved at a snail's pace. I overheard people's conversations. Another room was no longer usable, or a building had collapsed on the residents. Food supplies were running low. How they heard people walking to their house late at night, and how the damage to buildings would go. No one spoke about the radio host. Above us, there was loud thunder, and we looked up to the sky. There are only 10 people in front of us now. I just needed to wait a little more. A loud crack, and I jumped. Suddenly, there was a burst of heavy rain from the sky, and drops of acid fell. An older woman put up her hands to protect her face with a horrific screech, only for her hands to receive the same treatment. It burned black, sizzling down until her bones were exposed, and I wasn't going to wait around. Turning around, I fled back home and ran as fast as I could, managing to get under the shelter down the road, hoping it would be enough before the winds sped up. I ignored the screams of my neighbors, leaving them to sizzle and burn. Seeing the open door with Eliza holding it open, waiting inside with a bandana covering the lower part of her face. Before the acid rain, our marriage was on the way out. We barely interacted, more like roommates than partners.
"Get back! Don't touch me!"
I demanded her, darting up the steps under the awning and stripped off. Once I touched my bare skin, I was done for. Throwing my jacket outside, my shoes and jeans joining them. They were damaged, disintegrating in front of us, and I was so close to doing the same to my skin. Sitting in my underwear and shirt, my wife closed the door and locked it. A deep, rasping cough caused my body to rock, and I felt her hand soothing me on my back, breathing steadily, placing mine on top of hers, grateful for the support. Outside, through the window, I saw figures laying limp on the pathway in the road. Across the road, my neighbor struck the door with his fist repeatedly, only to remain locked out, pleading for his family to open the door, to let him in, and instead, they let him slowly perish. His corpse lay limp.
"I didn't feel anything on me,"
I gasped, still expecting to feel my skin burn and know their only option for me was to permit me to die on the streets. Crisis averted. I leaned down the wall and slid down, sitting on the hardwood floor.
I was so close.
I would have shared his fate. Neither of us found the words to console the other. The storms were growing more common, more unpredictable. It was inevitable for someone to be caught outside in it. Leaning close to me, she murmured,
"Send someone else next time. Don't risk yourself."
The few times I was allowed out to wander kept me sane. I didn't tell her this, though. Instead, I held her and felt the comforting warmth of her body. Outside, the screams had died down. He must have died. I put up the shutters to prevent any survivors from trying to knock on our door, securing it.
"Don't take this off again."
I kissed her forehead and held her for a moment, snuggling into her and placing my chin on her shoulder. The sky was dark now. Large trucks with sealed-off windows drove past, spraying the surfaces of the house with a thick gel to protect the structures from the acid rain. It clung to the buildings, creeping down them slowly. We held each other and watched while they drove by, layer after layer applied by multiple trucks until the window was concealed in a haze. All that food and other supplies would have been destroyed by the acid rain, making our stockpile even more valuable and at risk of people wanting to steal it. The sirens echoed, the warning, and my house guests all walked into the basement, taking their possessions down with them. No one asked me why I was undressed. Once they were down, I started my rounds of checking each window and door to the outside, making sure I locked each of them behind me. She handed me a pair of jeans and running shoes before the damn cycle repeated. Going down into the basement, the creak of the stairs and the stench of many people close by with a latrine. Even emptied, it was foul, waiting until the last minute, until it was time. Closing the door, locked it, and took my place close to the door, ready and waiting. I noticed a few of our number were no longer with us, and gave Jimbo a questioning look. Charlie sat near the door, slowly sinking into madness, his dark hair now white and a drained look in his eyes.
"Good evening, dear listeners. I hear people were taken unaware today by a surprise storm."
I could hear the smug leer through the radio waves.
"It is important to stay focused. Remember the fallen, for they are your neighbors, your friends, and even your family. You held them dear to your heart, yet never forget. Survival is key. And you listeners, oh, you are most pleasing."
A sharp pang of guilt gripped me. My neighbors who were left outside by their families to perish in fear, not to mention the countless others who had been left behind. I didn't help or even look back until I reached safety.
I must admit, I was surprised that certain homes shut their doors to people in need.
This didn't impact us. The wind and rain outside picked up again.
Oh, and it was a shame about the loss of all that food and supplies. Don't worry, I'm here to look after you, to guide my little children through the night.
I wanted to pick up the radio and smash it on the floor, even if it meant we wouldn't receive information about what would come.
I've painted red on the doors of houses where food remains.
I looked in the direction of the door with a quickening heartbeat. We still had supplies, enough to keep us going, but certainly not enough for everyone in town to have their fill. The storm, the endless fucking storm, raged.
Take care, dear listeners, and I'll see you in the morning.
It flickered off before restarting.
Oh, before I forget, make sure you stay nice and quiet tonight.
Static crept with a loud final burst, and the radio turned off. It was my turn to rest tonight, and perhaps a flicker of guilt that they would have happily locked me out of my home if my wife hadn't stopped them. With my knife in my hand, while wrapped in a blanket, my back on the door, and Eliza, my wife, and the children already sleeping, curling up together with their blankets. My eyes lingered on the doorknob, waiting in case it turned. His warnings always held true. The rain softly pattered on a protected roof, and they were relatively relaxed, chatting about what kind of canned goods there were or how nice the food was. I couldn't block it out, exhaling, and they didn't hear the creaking of the floorboards above us. Whoever, or whatever it was walking in the kitchen, circling around the kitchen table, and cupboards were opened, shuffling, and things being thrown down. I stood slowly. The items in the kitchen were a distraction, and I knew it was stupid to get this angry. Holding the knife, I felt Jimbo grab my shirt near the waist and shook his head. Nodding, I waited, leaning on the stairs and waited.
Hey, just grab whatever you can.
Do you think they're awake?
Shut up!
The hushed whispers grew louder while they stood near the basement door.
I think there are people here. There are people everywhere. Is this Neil's house? Shut up!
He spat. There may not have been that many cans upstairs in the kitchen cupboard. 10 or 9. A glance at our supply and then at my resting family told me everything I needed to know. Hastily unlocking the door, ripping it open, and seeing 2 scrawny teenagers wearing patched-up clothing, standing there, equally stunned, with the front window open. A chill air, yet fortunately, no unnatural burdens shining through.
Get out of my house!
I roared at them, raising the knife ready to strike. They stared at me with full backpacks with stolen items from mine and other people's houses. The taller one shook his head, clutching his bag tightly to his chest while the pair edged toward the door. I snatched the bag, yanking it, and the boys looked at each other, panicked. The younger one held a knife and aimed it at me, a feeble threat with a trembling hand. He carried it, but never actually used it before.
Let go and get the hell out!
I roared at them. The taller released the bag, putting his hands up in a surrender, and the youngest expression changed. Posture now upright and ready, driven by an unseen power well beyond him, and the knife was now inside an expert grip. I kicked him to push him back toward the window. The younger stabbed, then sliced at my forearm while his brother screamed at him to stop, only before the younger stepped forward again and tried to stab me. Again, I pushed him back. It didn't feel real. He charged me, smacking into my body with a demonic laugh, and went to stab me. I grabbed his wrist.
I hope you like a bit of excitement.
The radio host's voice rang out. I turned his wrist backward, only for him to thrust the knife into his chest. I shook my head in disbelief, grabbing his arm to stop him falling backward, choking on blood, and his hand clutched the wound. His brother, enraged, yelled, and...
Oh, I wonder how the other will respond.
I don't know what came over me. He was screaming, tugging at my arms, and already gripped with guilt. Somehow, my knife met his chest, and I heard Eliza's scream behind me. Sinking to the floor, I sat in the pool of the teenager's blood. It coated my hands, and slowly I exhaled, finally recognizing their faces. Their green eyes, sandy brown hair, and horny skin. So alike to their parents. They were the kids from number 17. My neighbors. I knew their family. We used to meet each other at school events and give friendly, neighborly waves. I couldn't even remember their names. A familiar shadow stood, lingering. Glancing up, I saw Jimbo staring down at me. Soon, my family joined them. My wife didn't bother to shield our children from the sight, and stunned expressions greeted me.
I did this.
When the depressing dawn came, the radio presenter's voice rang out.
Good morning, dear listeners. I hear we had a little problem.
I winced. It echoed from the basement and sounded like it was coming from the walls.
Oh, how delightful. No law enforcement. How will we proceed with the murder of these two starving boys looking for food to feed their little sister?
He let it hang in the air, and suspiciously, the rain outside came to a stop. It is time for action. Static flickered before buzzing out. I didn't stay to listen to the rest of the tirade. The muffled sound of his voices lingered with those of my dwindling number of companions. I watched while they covered their shoes in plastic to protect them, opening the door and with the clouds fading away. Jimbo and Eliza both helped me take the corpses outside on the lawn for their parents to claim. In daylight, I could see how gaunt their faces were, how their clothes hung limp around their frames. They had been starving. Their father came to collect the dead, and it was evident how much better off we were in comparison to our neighbors. He looked at me with broken eyes. His children were the last reason he remained alive. Following him while their bodies were taken to the landfill. What had once been the park now had the gel remains of people who had been killed. They carefully put the children down while their father wept, and I wanted to apologize, even expecting violence. Instead, he kept me weeping.
It's better this way. It's better. It was too much.
Eliza and I walked back silently, a meter apart, and I couldn't bear to look at her, in case it would make her guilty as well, or maybe a cowardly attempt at preserving my dignity. The boys were waiting for us outside. I wasn't ready to face them and what I had done. I found my children dead. Eliza staring down at their corpses, laying at my front door with their eyes vacantly staring up into the sky. They were stripped with pieces of flesh cut from their thighs, arms, and their stomach opened and their organs taken. Chunks of meat for the hungry, and I knew this was my fault. Retribution for killing two starving boys. An eye for an eye. The cans of food and other supplies no longer felt worthwhile. Eliza wailed loudly, dropped to her knees, pulling them close to her and holding them to my chest. The acid rain fell. I held her. I held them. The fleeting warmth of her body draining while I ignored the boring into my flesh. It twisted off, piece by piece, until it melted from me. I heard the front door slam, locking us out of our own home, while Jimbo and Charlie claimed it for themselves. Thunder struck loudly, and the damned muffled voice rang out from the radio.
Hello, dear listeners. I hope you had a pleasant day. Prepare for intense storms this evening.